reconvene. Are we ready to roll?
Yes.
So,
we are on.
Also, it's come to my attention, I'd like to recognize Anthony Gorman. He is a representative from Senator Daley's office who is present here today as well. And I was looking for a face or a hand that says, where are you? Over in the back corner. Thank you. All right. Item 5A, Mr. Deeney.
Good morning, Board. Tom Deeney, Road Commissioner for Siskiyou County. From the earlier presentations, it sounds like there's a lot of questions headed my way, so I'll go through the first half of these slides here fairly quickly. We'll have enough time to talk about the road conditions and any questions you have.
Okay.
Where are you from?
Siskiyou County, here.
Road Department.
Road Commissioner,
oh.
Department of Public Works.
Okay.
The
road guy.
Okay.
So you can see right here where we the route that we're talking about on Copco Road from 3.6 to 17.5 mile markers depicted in blue, and we've been driving this route several times a month and taking footage on our GoPro, and that way we're able to match up before and afters for various periods during the year. Next slide, please. So the first place we start, unfortunately with the lighting in here, some of these slides aren't going to show as well as they can, but I'll talk us through, it'll be fine. As you can see on the left-hand slide for all of these slides, these were the filming we took earlier in the year, February 7th of 2023, and the right-hand slides will all be from December 12th, 2023. You can see in this slide here, and these are in the same location, that the road is starting to cave up on the center line in the left-hand lane, and that is primarily due to overweight traffic or construction weight traffic coming down the road. On this one, yes, go ahead.
Ms. Davis, you want to try and hit the lights and see if that helps? I mean, it's okay, but it might give us a little more. There we go. Thank you.
Okay. Next slide, please. This is at mile marker 4, mile post 4. You can see where the right-hand side of that shoulder had been patched in the past, was doing pretty good, and now it is damaged and been patched, and it is starting to be damaged again. This is from overweight loads crushing the shoulder. When this road was designed, heavyweight vehicles were not in mind. Next, please. This just shows an exacerbation of the alligator cracking. And then about midway up the picture on the right-hand side, you can see where all asphalt has been removed, and we're back down to native material underneath the roadway. Another picture of a similar problem, the road shoulder started to chip out, as you can see in the right-hand picture, and with that chipping out and the traffic continuing to go over, it is blowing all the asphalt up almost to the midline. Another example of the same thing, same story, shoulder starts to give, and traffic just keeps breaking that shoulder off more and more, crawling up towards the middle. And another picture of the same, this time we're headed back into Hornbrook. We started having breaks in the shoulder. You can see it in the first picture, just that little edge right up there by the curve was starting to give away. And then with traffic, it just breaks out and it goes further and further out. Once again, same story. You can see in the left-hand side where it had been repaired in the past, right? But you can see in the right-hand picture in December, about 4 weeks ago, we're down on native material in some sections, and the roadway is continuing to break towards center line. Same story. Way up towards the top left, you can see a patch on the February 7th picture. You can see where that patch is broken, and now it's made the left size edge of that pothole, which goes almost across the entire drivable surface of the road. Same as before. We had a small pothole, it's getting much worse, and it's turning on that one corner, it's going back to native material. This picture's self-evident as well. The only exception here is there was no pothole, so in less than a year we had a pothole start and go almost across the entire drivable surface of this road. So this one, it shows where it was broken, and we have patched this at 15.8 But the patching's starting to break, and the patch is actually starting to hold, right? But now on the opposite side of where he patched has gone all the way down to native. The reason why this photo is in here is it's a good example of Public Works is not ignoring Copco Road, right? We just simply can't keep up. Next slide, please. This is coming up towards the end of where we take our pictures, but here's another example where there is no good drivable path on this road. There is no solid piece of road surface in either lane for traffic. You can see in this picture that the damage on the left-hand side is worse, but most of that was already there when we took the pictures. Now it's on the right side. You can see where we're losing the shoulder. So a car to navigate this turn would have to take an S pattern through the center of the roadway. And this is the latest incident with Copco Road. We'll stay on this photo for a minute, and then I have an aerial video of this. But we were notified last week that we had a brake failure where the road had started to slip down towards the lake. I drove out myself and took measurements. We're looking at about a 3-foot heave in this section right here from the base of that roadway to the top. We marked it off with candlestick markers and delineators and put up barricades. The main reason for this from our initial investigation is this road is right up next to the lake edge. Can you go to the video, please? And here's some aerial footage that we shot with our drone. You could see where the edges broke out and where the water line used to go all the way up to those bushes there. Initial investigation shows that this is from the rapid drawdown of the lake. There is a pressure differential in the dam, and now since that water is not holding that bank up, it is starting to slide. This is going to be repaired by Kiewit. They're out there today working on this. They pulled their permit on Friday. Siskiyou County is not going to participate in this repair because it's not our responsibility. This is not normal wear and tear on a road. The only other additional thing that I have to say about the road surface is we have been sending crews up to patch this winter to try and fill in some of the biggest potholes. I had a crew up there yesterday. I have another crew up there today. It being winter time, hot mix is not an option. So I can't fix it, right? All I can do is patch it and wait for it to blow out again, which is going to happen with the kind of traffic that we're seeing. So I have a little bit more to say, but I'm sure it's going to get covered by questions, so let's do that, and then I can wrap up.
Okay. We'll start down here. Supervisor Howell.
I don't know where to go. Do you have any idea what the road was designed to support as far as the weight?
I don't. I can look it up in my office, but it was built to Siskiyou County road standards, or at least it was supposed to when it was. It's years old, and it did have what road commissioners like to say, deferred maintenance, right? It wasn't as well taken care of as it should have been. But even if... So it's getting more damaged than would be expected from all these heavy trucks.
I don't know what more I would say. The only question I would have is, it seems to me, my experience with roads, the fix is total excavation, build up a base from where it's slipping below and not in the winter.
We couldn't do that now, and I am in agreement with you. The safest bet to go forward would be to pulverize the road. Put it to dirt, right, or asphalt chunk. That solves a lot of problems. It's easier to maintain during construction. You don't have to worry about weight limits. And then you can come through and blade it with a grader, right? And then when we're done, reconstruct the road from scratch. That would be the ideal way to fix this road.
So you've got one place where it's done this. How many other places do you think this is going to happen along the road?
Well, it's an estimate, and I'm glad you said that because that leads me to something that I forgot to mention, which was watching for future slips. We've flown that drone there and in multiple other places. This is the only place that is showing a break right now. But there are several suspect locations in Kotko with the road, because up at Kotko, the road's right up there against the lake. So we're going to continue to go up there and look for cracking in the shoulder. You'll see that first before you see the crack in the roadway. And then we go investigate uphill. I would not be surprised if we saw more of these. How many? I don't even know how I would begin to tell you. Could be none, right? Could be four or five. We're just going to have to address them when they come up.
Okay. You may not know. This is my last question. Who's monitoring structure compromises around the platform?
Structure compromises as far as roadway, or are we talking about houses?
As far as slippage.
As far as slippage, that is part of what Res is doing, but I haven't seen any of that information. That they're supposed to be looking at, what do they call that? The integrity of the bank.
You had said that it's the responsibility of the KRRC for the what you just showed us.
Yes.
And that you wouldn't be participating in, I guess, reconstruction of that. But you, your department will be overseeing that it's up to standard.
Yes, sir.
Can you talk about that just a little?
Yes. When I said, that's an excellent question. When I said we wouldn't be participating, I mean I wouldn't be providing labor for the construction, right? They did have to pull an encroachment permit. They had to provide their plans, so we made sure that we agreed with how they were going to fix it. Then they do the work, and then we come inspect.
Okay.
Right? That's what I meant. We're not going to let them just go all willy-nilly.
I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Sure. And I thought we had a brief conversation before. You know, there is a rating for whatever the road system is, and that certainly costs it, but fellow LTC members know that we do a calculation. You know, I would like to know what the before number was, because I know I had asked for that. Where we are currently, if you can ascertain that. Because at the end of the day, you know, my perspective is, when everything's said and done, we should get a brand new road out of this. Realizing that that's easier said than done. Including ourselves putting skin in the game, because deferred maintenance, and I've worked this area far too long, and when I was working up there, the roads never were maintained. I get where we were at any moment in time, but we never rebuilt a road. We patched a road. And I can show you all kinds of places. Again, I get it. When we put a patch in there, it gets deteriorates, and then we're redoing that. So I would like to see us skin in the game, put in request for step money, whatever it is, to rebuild a road from point A to point B.
Yes, sir. We're working on that.
And if we could get the rating, because at the end of the day, And that's just the minimum. I think it should be whatever, you know, without rebuilding the road, whatever we got to do to get raise the bar, if you will. Let's just say the number's 40. You know, I want to see us at 60 and above, and then we're working to improve the whole condition out there.
Yes, sir, and I agree. I will get you that starting number. I know it was rated in the poor range. I don't know the exact number. I don't know that it has been remeasured. The good news is we're going out for bid to get that done sometime soon.
Right.
So we will get that. And I agree, the road needs to be in better condition than we
And just for the public, I don't think we have any roads that are quote-unquote in the excellent or better, unless it was brand new within the last year or two.
We've got a section of Big Spring that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, we got a brand new road. And that's the kind of project that I want to see us go after for, because when everything's said and done, that's what we're going to be left with.
Yes, sir.
Right. Thank you.
Supervisor Oberyn.
Supervisor Haupt stole most of my thunder, which is okay. I'm not going to ask the same questions. Do you anticipate that with the drawdown and then a little bit of precipitation refill and then drying out again, we're going to have some erosion, there's going to be more of that that's going to happen in places?
Yes, ma'am, I do. So what we're talking about is pore pressure differential, which is the fancy way of saying how hard it is for water to move through dirt. The worst thing, in my opinion, that you can do with that is change that number around. And that's what we're going to do. So right now we have a bunch of pressure moving downhill towards the lake because there's no water to hold it down, right? Water's super heavy. So once we pull that around, the water starts running out. So everything starts to get used to moving that way. Then the lake's going to fill back up, and it's going to stop that and actually retard that pressure back. And then we're going to lower it, and it's going to come back out again. I'm not a hydrologist, I'm not an expert, but logic tells me that this is a problem we're going to have to deal with in the future.
How long do you think that's going to take after?
After drawdown?
Mm-hmm.
With as wet it is, I would imagine that we would start to see things fairly quickly. But once again, I'd be happy to reach out to a hydrologist, but when something starts to slip, it doesn't normally stop slipping.
So stabilization is going to be an issue for 5 years, 2 years?
Until the roads are built.
Yeah. I said it a couple years ago, and I probably said it a few times, that the road around that whole area is the legacy we leave to the folks that are left there. And I hope that we can figure out a way to come up with a really, really good product.
Yes, ma'am. I'll do my best.
Anyway.
Supervisor Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Supervisor Ogren. You said that a couple years ago. I still didn't relate to my people. They really appreciated that coach. They did a great deal. I have questions for you and Chelsea. If you want to come, Chelsea. Well, you guys can team off each other. Compliments to you for your documentation. Huge. The documentation. Tell us the story. Compliments to you for having the foresight to do that.
Thank you.
So now, they have a meeting at Cochran. They said they're going to fill in with dirt short term until everything gets done, and then they're going to do the major fixes afterwards on the road. So I have some questions in regards to legal responsibility. If something happens or goes wrong, are they legally liable? Who's legally liable for that? Short term, ambulance can't get up there, fire engine. I'll ask these questions later on. Someone can't get up there. Who's liable for that? If the road sloughs off, there's no access.
Well, it's a county roadway, right? So it's my responsibility to make sure that those roads are maintained. The short answer would be, we're liable, right? They have a perk permit to do the work, so they're allowed to do what they need to do. We do have an agreement for them to keep a lane open and make sure we can always get emergency response vehicles in there. But as far as the integrity of the roadway, that's our responsibility.
I may add that we did do an amendment to the roads MOU last year, and we included catastrophic road failure as KRRC's responsibility. So that is going to be their responsibility to fix it and pay for that. And we are treating the slough at mile marker 13 as such.
As it should be. Yeah, as it should be. Yeah, the MOU is going to give us the ability to enforce a contract, I'll put it that way. Your idea about building it from scratch is actually what people may say, oh, we're just trying to get money out of this. We're just going after it to try to take advantage of a situation so we get a free road. That's not the case at all. The case is there's been overweight traffic on it, exceeding the weight, damage that's been done. It's actually very much a legitimate demand or request. And it's because it exceeded the capacity of the road and what we agreed to.
Yes, sir.
For Cotco Bridge, nobody talked about it. I think you gave me the color purple, but I can't remember.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It is still rated at a bonus purple load, right? Mm-hmm. And they're inspected once a year. I did have my bridge guy, Jasper, go up there and take a look at it. There's no undue wear on that bridge. It's still perfectly safe.
All right. And we'll be inspecting it once the portion of Cotco goes, and we'll be inspecting it to see if there's any damage or anything like that from sediment or loss of hydrology or anything like that.
Yes, we'll look for scouring down on the piers and doing a full inspection of it when the water levels have changed so drastically. We've already talked to Caltrans about how we're going to have to do that.
All right, good. And then there's been a lot of trucks before there's this thing invented, it's a map, and they were going off GPS instead of getting their work crew maps. So I wanted to make sure that road was still very strong. It's vital for fire engines, because the fire station's on one side.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, for evacuations. Some of the questions I'll have for Cotco Road, will it be able to support fire engines? I'm thinking about the summer. Of course, also winter, in case there's a food fire, but the summer. And then will it be able to support a mass exit if that happens? You have KRCE, those sorts of areas that may have to leave. How are we looking in place if something were to happen this summer?
It'll be the same situation we were in last summer. They're required to keep a lane open. And if there is an emergency, they'll get everything out of the way so we can get in and out. If they're wildfire, for instance, is the thing I worry about most. There's always a lane going to be open to get EMS vehicles in there if it's required.
Right. And then, because the damage, I understand there's not going to be traffic on either bedroom, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct. So the original traffic California traffic management plan, which is included as part of the construction management plan of the project, they had planned, the contractors had planned to utilize Iron Gate Estates to cut through to use Ager Busway. There should be no major traffic, construction traffic, large trucks traveling along Ager Busway. They're all concentrated to Copco.
And then also the damage was done to the wooden bridges because it overweights on it, the wrong permit. Will the temporary bridges remain that are handle heavy weights and heavy loads?
The stalling of the bridges, are you talking about at Fall Creek and Dry Creek?
That's correct.
Unclear at this point. I would imagine that they would want to remove that stalling and put it back to where it was. But those bridges are still going to have to go through a full inspection when they're done to make sure that they will be at least as strong as they were before they started.
Which is also a reasonable demand because they exceeded weights when they were lowered. So.
Yes, sir.
All right. And then,
if I may add about those bridges, so the county has been in very close contact with Kiewit about the maintenance and shoring up of those bridges. That did happen towards the end of last year. We have required that Kiewit give us monthly monitoring reports on those bridges. So they are doing surveys of those bridges to make sure that there is no bowing or other issues with the piers. They're also doing observations and sending that to us on a monthly basis. So we are keeping really close eye on those two bridges in particular.
All right. And then the last, signs. Have signs been posted telling trucks not to go certain ways in certain roads?
Yes, sir. Yes. And I have reiterated numerous times, and I believe the contractors are following through on this, on letting drivers know that they have to slow down. Public safety is of utmost importance. I know that we had received some public observations and some concerns about some drivers on Ager Beswick that were not heavy loads but related to the project. We have cleared that up, and there has been notices given to those drivers from the contractor side. So they are paying very close attention, and that's of utmost importance to them as well.
And I think I hadn't thought of this, but it shows the county's going to bat for everybody. I mean, we're right on as best as we can. People tell us information, we forward it on, and you guys are tackling as best as you can.
We're trying pretty immediate response time. So as Road Commissioner Deeney had mentioned, when we were told of mile marker 13, it was an immediate response from the county to get a plan in place so that part of the road could get fixed.
Okay. Thank you. I'll stop there, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Howe?
One follow-up. A little concerned that we seem to be focused on just the surface of the road. And the reason I bring that up is because that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with what every engineer would describe, I think, as a removal of the static pressure from below, which is causing mass wasting on the side of that hill. So I would just ask that we would reach out to a geotechnical engineer who will look at more than just the road prism. And in this case, maybe a relocation of the roads is more appropriate than trying to rebuild it in place.
We can explore that, absolutely.
Thank you.
Supervisor Balance Reynolds. Supervisor Roper. Supervisor Chris. Thank you.
Excuse me, real quick.
Yes.
I thought you were going to remember the accident.
Yes, sir. I did want my final statement. Public safety is the Department of Public Works' entire job, right? In fact, if you think about it, it's pretty much every county department's entire job. The tragedy that occurred out on Copco Road was heartbreaking. As road commissioner, I get notified of every fatality on our roadways, and it absolutely breaks my heart. That particular incident was outside of the construction zone and unrelated to that, which I just wanted to use this as an opportunity to just remind everybody, it doesn't matter where you're driving at, you got to pay attention to be safe, right? We have accidents like this several times a year throughout the county, and they're all heartbreakers. And while this didn't happen where we were doing the construction, it easily could have. So just take your time if you're going somewhere and be safe. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a 2-minute break. First, yep.
Nope, I'm good if we want to keep going.
I thought you wanted to break the... Okay.
I think we're good enough.
All right.
It's short enough.
Yeah, you think.
That's
okay. We're going to move on to 6A. California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Harris, good morning.
Good morning. Michael Harris, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Chairman, board members, thank you for allowing us to come here today. If it's acceptable, I would like to start off with a presentation on the Fall Creek Hatchery, and then I will come back up.
Sure.
Okay, great. I'll let Eric introduce himself.
Thanks, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I'm Eric Jones. I'm with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I oversee the 6 hatchery programs in the northern region. So I'm going to give a presentation on the history of the Fall Creek Hatchery, kind of why it was originally constructed and where we're at now. So the first hydroelectric power development on Klamath River was made by Siskiyou Power Company, owned by the Fairchild family of Yreka. Its first development was the Fall Creek Powerhouse on Fall Creek in 1903. The first dam across the Klamath was installed by Siskiyou Power Company in 1910, which happened to be at the COPCO 1 dam site. In 1913, the California Oregon Power Company, or COPCO, acquired these hydro projects and constructed COPCO 1 dam. So originally, Fall Creek Hatchery was constructed on Fall Creek by COPCO in 1919 in lieu of a fish ladder over COPCO 1. So from 1919 to 1948, Fall Creek Hatchery was utilized to rear Chinook and Stillhead. Eggs to rear Chinook were collected from the Klamathon egg collection site, and eggs to rear Stillhead were collected from Bogus and Fall Creek. Chinook smolts were released in the spring, and Chinook yearlings were released in the fall. So from 1948 to 2022, there has been intermittent fish production at the Fall Creek Hatchery with production goals of approximately 180,000 yearling Chinook and 30,000 Stillhead. Most recently, in 2021 and in 2022, the department reared approximately 200,000 Fall Run Chinook each year at Fall Creek Hatchery to imprint these fish and encourage adult returns to the present site post Iron Gate Dam removal. Unfortunately, we were unable to rear fish at the Fall Creek Hatchery in 2023 due to construction of the new facility that was going on. So in 1962, Iron Gate Dam was completed, and in 1966, that's what started the operations at Iron Gate Hatchery. Initially, Iron Gate Hatchery shared the yearling Fall Run Chinook program with Fall Creek Hatchery. Iron Gate Hatchery began rearing 900,000 additional yearlings, and Fall Creek continued to rear their 180,000 yearlings and 30,000 stillhead. This continued until approximately 2003, when operations ceased at the Fall Creek Hatchery. Iron Gate goals changed over time, with their most recent release goals of 6 million Fall Run Chinook and 75,000 yearling coho. With Iron Gate Dam being removed, there would no longer be a water source at the Iron Gate Hatchery, so operations had to be transferred to the new and improved Fall Creek Hatchery. So Fall Creek Hatchery has been completely remodeled, new construction from the facility's water intake to their outflow. It has been designed to maximize fish production goals, but had to stay within the constraints of our water and space available. Some of the early challenges we anticipate being faced with are adult returns to the facility following dam removal. In an effort to ensure we are still able to collect an adequate number of eggs and melt to meet production goals, we still plan to operate the Iron Gate Hatchery auxiliary fish ladder with attraction flows pumped from the Klamath River and Bogus Creek. A secondary adult collection efforts will come from Bogus Creek. We're really optimistic that adults will begin to return to the fish ladder at Fall Creek as soon as possible, because the yearling Chinook already imprinted at Fall Creek in 21 and 22 should start returning to the site this year. So these are the new production or release goals for the Fall Creek Hatchery starting in 2024. As you can see, the yearling coho release goal is still 75,000 fish, and our total Chinook release goal is 3.25 million fish. Again, these numbers are based on what can be raised with a 10 CFS water right and the amount of rearing space that could be made available at the site.
Excuse me, you said 3.2, I think I see 1.2 up there.
So it's a total of all three Chinook. Okay. Chinook, there's different size
gotcha.
Ranges.
All right, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, next slide. There you go. So in addition to an entirely new facility being built and having to transfer all operations from Iron Gate Hatchery to Fall Creek, there have been numerous actions that have been taking place behind the scenes. And to keep this short, I won't run through all of these, but as you can see, there has been several operations plans, procurement contracts, permitting, and all that needed to be in place prior to operations starting at the new facility. In addition, something important to point out, we are currently working on the 2024 release strategies from Fall Creek Hatchery, and we have a meeting on that in the next couple weeks, so more to follow. So the transition of eggs from Iron Gate to Fall Creek was a little tricky because of Fall Creek Hatchery's construction timeline. Plus, we were dealing with a live product that is returning from the ocean and kind of on their own time schedule. On October 11th, Iron Gate Hatchery collected their first eggs of the season, and the facility continued to collect eggs until December 18th. This was at 2023. Unfortunately, the egg incubation area at Fall Creek Hatchery was not completed until November 13th of 2023. So all the eggs that were collected this year had to be incubated at Iron Gate Hatchery until November 14th of 2023. On that date, November 14th, 2023, was when the first Fall Run Chinook eggs were transferred from Iron Gate to Fall Creek Hatchery. Thus, that's the beginning of operations at the new facility up there. So from November 14th to December 21st, a total of a little over 5 million Chinook eggs, 127,000 coho eggs, 91,000 and some change juvenile coho were all transferred from Iron Gate to Fall Creek Hatchery. Currently, all the life stages are doing really well, and we're really happy with the way things are going so far. Just a quick description of these three pictures. The picture on the left is the Iron Gate Hatchery / Fall Creek Hatchery crew with our first walkthrough of the new Fall Creek Hatchery called the Chinook Building. That's where we're doing all of our incubation right now, the eggs. The middle photo is just a picture of some of the construction that's been going on up there. And the photo on the right is an actual photo of the first Fall Run Chinook eggs that were reared at the new site. And those are sac fry that just hatched. With that being said, take some questions if there are any.
Can we get a tour of it?
Sure. Absolutely. Just got to set it up.
Okay. That's one of those field trip tours in the spring.
Well, I would suggest that we do do a tour up there.
That's what I'm suggesting. Yeah, that's what I'm suggesting. I don't know when. I'm just saying, as it comes up here, I don't know when is a good time to be up here. Marchish or now, or you give us an idea.
So there's still quite a bit of construction going on up there,
okay.
And so we're only able to go in certain areas, mm-hmm. and we have to wear our PPE. Construction is supposed to be completed somewhere around the middle of this year, so somewhere like in July.
Okay.
That would be a good time to go after construction completed.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I would say, in context of the roads, everything that we see, so we're not looking at it just from a missing perspective, that we see it firsthand.
Okay. I'll leave it in capable hands. Supervisor Chris, anything?
Yeah, I do have a few questions, or a number on the hatchery here. I was trying to do some online research looking at it. What was the original output that did it for the Fall Creek Hatchery?
So the research that I had, and I don't know if it went all the way back to when it was originally started, but was the 180,000 yearling Chinook and the 30,000 steelhead.
Sorry, just writing it down.
Yeah. The facility now has a lot more rearing space than the old facility.
Okay. That was the original intent, was 30,000 steelhead and the 180,000 Chinook yearlings?
Correct.
And the steelhead were yearlings also?
They would be considered smolts.
Smolts?
Yeah.
Okay. And then when were they released approximately?
The yearlings were released in the fall, and the steelhead were released in the spring.
Okay. And then were those the only two types of fish that were released?
That I could find research on, yes, right. Back then.
And did that change between 1919 and 1948 much?
Or? Yes. Well, it didn't change much. They added the coho in addition.
Okay. And do you know what number they added for
I do not have that information.
And that was before 1948?
I don't have that information, unfortunately.
That's fine. Okay. If you could find that, it would be great.
Okay.
It would be great to find that information.
All right.
Of what was up there and what was released at that time.
Because I understand the Fall Creek Hatchery was put in place, as your presentation showed, to make up for potential habitat above Cotton.
Correct.
And that was the original intent of that, that plan. We've done a tour of Iron Gate fish hatcheries before I was on the Board of Supervisors. Then COPSEC may have spearheaded it. We did a tour, and the Iron Gate fish hatchery, from my understanding, was only wasn't supposed to make up for everything above Iron Gate, just between Iron Gate and so far, like JC Bill and Cochran.
That's my understanding.
Okay. And then I have a question for you. This is along the lines of the natural barriers that were already in the river. Discussion about barriers that would block fish passage further north. At the meeting in Cocker Lake done by KRC and Res, they said there'd be no blasting or any alterations to existing natural barriers that are in place. Is that the Cal Fish and Wildlife perspective as well?
So I'm a fish hatchery guy, I'm a fish farmer. Okay. Might be something Mike would be able to answer for.
Yes. And if I can ask Mike the same question, or I can wait till Mike gets up here too.
I can walk up there, or I can wait, whatever you...
Come on up. We'll nail you now.
Mike Harris, Cal Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you.
Yes, that is our current perspective.
That's your question? Okay.
Yeah.
And then, oh.
Clarify that. No blasting?
Of the artificial barriers?
Uh-huh.
Not initially that I'm aware of. I'm going to double check on that, though, because I know there's so many facets to this, and I will get back to the board.
Thank you.
But initially, I think they're going to see how it works naturally. So, but I will get back to you.
All right. Thank you. And then, Mr. Harrison, these were catching questions, so I'll mail you on the parcel B land.
Yes.
Right.
Parcel, of course, that's the land. I think most people know the parcel B land is the land that was currently underwater that will be exposed. Fish and Wildlife's perspective on ownership for those lands?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the questions come up regarding not only ownership, but you know, when will the transfer will occur. I don't have a direct answer for you in terms of when that transfer will occur. The department is part of the parcel B land discussions, but that final decision gets made by CNRA. So if I had to pick a window, it could be anywhere from 2026 to 2030, depending on how the parcels go. Of course, right now the parcels are held by KRC. They have to do drawdown, dam removal, river restoration actions, revegetation, and see how the restoration goes. At that time, those parcels, which are the parcels that are owned by Pacific Corp, and pretty much are either around or the lake footprint, will get transferred to either the state or another suitable entity, appropriate entity. And since we're not even close to that date, I can't really tell you the final outcome of that, because we're actually just currently in the discussions. And so in terms of who would get the properties and when they would actually be transferred, you know, we're working through that process.
So it could be as early as 2026 or as late as 2026?
You know, I mean, that's really, really optimistic, but, you know, I mean, it depends on how well the restoration goes. Who are the other entities? Is the state going to take it? So, we're all hoping that the restoration goes extremely well and it's successful right off the bat. So.
And then the restoration, would it be... is the plan that it has to be restored to a certain level before it can be handed off?
Right, yeah, there's certain mitigation requirements and expectations that need to be met before KRC's obligations to hand it over to us are met.
The one concern I had would be, of course, it would be a great area for a fire to go right in that canyon.
No, that's a great question. The department obviously supports fire-resilient natural landscapes. The revegetation that's proposed out there is predominantly, it's actually all, you know, collection of native seeds to recreate the natural environment that would have been out there by structure prior to dam removal. Now, there currently isn't any plans to do fuels reduction out at parcel B lands. You know, we're early in the process. I think it sounds like there's actually going to be, at the next meeting here, more information in regard to the fuels and fires in that area.
Right.
The department looks forward to getting more information to add that in there.
As you're probably aware, the Board of Supervisors voted unanimous in support of the Shasta Indian Nation acquiring a percentage of the parcel B lands.
Correct, yes. So we passed that on to the California Natural Resources Agency.
Perfect, thank you. I'm going to stop there.
Okay. We're going to stick with hatchery here. Let's finish
all right,
that one up. And then we'll, because you're going to come back up.
I'm going to come back up.
Okay.
Well, thanks for jumping ahead.
It's all right. Supervisor Ogren. Okay. Supervisor Howe. We're hatchery.
I don't have
any hatchery. Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela. So, two things on the hatchery. What's the length of time that it'll be operational? Is this permanent, or is there a closure date?
Right now, we have funding for 8 years. So we definitely will be operating for at least 8 years.
And is it the department's position to continue to operate after that? And where is this funding coming from currently?
I have not been made aware if we're going to be operating after that, but the funding came from Pacific Corps.
Okay.
For the next 8 years.
Okay. And are you going, in the new hatchery, are you going to use, I don't know what to call them or if there's a name for them, but the leftover spawners, once they die out, currently you give them away, basically. But the system, I think it's a nutrient to the system, and I know that we've had this dialogue with the department over the years about throwing or placing some of that discarded material back into the system for the health of the system. What's the department's position on that?
So I personally don't have a great deal of information okay. on that, but it is my understanding there are going to be some seeded throughout the system, but I haven't been involved with a lot of those discussions.
Okay. Thank you.
One question.
Yeah, Supervisor Valance.
What's the annual operating cost for hatchery?
Roughly $1.4 million plus CPI.
Per year?
Yes.
Thank you.
Supervisor Chris?
Yeah, I just have one follow-up. If you could send us the documentation for why a certain percentage of fish were produced in 1919, 1920, why those were the goals, the history behind why those numbers were picked.
Okay.
I tried to look them up online. There's Fish Bulletin 150 I read in, but it just couldn't find all the documentation.
Understandable.
Thank you.
I'll look it up.
Okay. Thank you.
All right,
we'll move on to Mr. Harris.
All right. Michael Harris, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So I just really want to touch back briefly onto the fencing issue, not actually go into the diagrams or anything like that, but really stress the way that worked out and appreciate the fact that we have these board meetings and you have a project manager on staff, because this discussion topic came up last week and we were very quickly able to discuss it, resolve it, and get that back in front of you. So appreciate these board meetings. Just to touch a little bit more, going back to the fuels reduction, just because I kind of gave a real brief answer there, I think one of the things the department is interested in figuring out is, you know, what type of concerns there are related to, is it overall fuels reduction? Is it just ladder fuels? Is it defensible space? So providing and getting that information and discussion will help us. So I'm not sure if I reach out to Chelsea as a starting point or Ms. Murphy as a starting point, we're interested in finding out more about that.
With regard to the fencing, can you clarify where we're at with that? Chelsea brought up that it's temporary only under the FERC order. So that
absolutely,
there's
yeah,
a lot of rumor out there about what's going to
there
happen.
There was a map that was out there. I mean, I think that's great. That's why they have public meetings, and that's why we bring these things out to the public. And a map was shown at a meeting that showed fencing that was more extensive than the actual EIR and EIS and reservoir area management plan talked about, which was, you know, protection of riparian resources and localized location with temporary fencing. And so that's what is going to be move forward to this process.
When we say temporary, what do we mean? 6 months? A year?
No, that's a great question, because I was talking to our wildlife program manager, Jeff Stoddard, yesterday about what constitutes a riparian fencing, a temporary fence, in terms of the fact that, you know, this isn't a fence that's going to be there for 4 or 5 weeks. This could be a fence that could be there for a couple of years, and I need to find out more information on the duration of the fencing, how long we expect it to be there in terms of protection of livestock as the vegetation goes through successional stages to success. And then what type of fencing constitutes temporary fencing? You know, for example, if it's a T-post fence that's slightly pounded in and has 3 strands of barbed wire and a smooth wire on the bottom, it can get pulled up very easily with a bobcat in a very short amount of time.
So the deer and the animal can play on either side.
Yeah, and then the smooth wire allows them to go under, so it'd be a wildlife-friendly fence. So I just need to find out more information about that. And we contacted KRC, and we're going to work through that, and it'll come back.
Okay. Continue on. Anything further before we ask questions for you?
No, I think go ahead and ask the questions, and I may be able to.
Supervisor Howe?
Yeah, I got a couple. So, not knowing a whole lot about fish, the project was touted as opening up a great deal of new habitat. So, how do you attract the fish upriver of the hatchery?
Well, I think the fish will naturally recolonize those areas. I mean, I think we already have fish at the base of Iron Gate trying to go up that we're capturing. So the expectation is they will naturally go past that point.
So the imprint. just for the water in general?
Yeah, and so that's our current process there, is that they will go up and they'll start to naturally recolonize these systems. And we're going to get between 10 and 12 years to allow that natural recolonization process to continue to move forward. And then the fish also will, coming out of the Fall Creek hatchery, will now be imprinted on Fall Creek versus down at Iron Creek.
In a meeting you had with Michael and I, Supervisor Kopsoff and I, we asked about a streamlined permitting process for people experiencing clogged irrigation structures downriver. I'm just wondering if there's any progress on that.
Yeah, we're still discussing that. I haven't made any significant progress that I can report back to you on.
It's pretty key. We're coming into the thick of it, and I don't want my constituents having to jump through seven different agencies to be able to go out and clean out a head gate.
Understood.
So with the projecting into the near future, at least, what should we anticipate as far as fishing regulation restrictions for outfitter guides on the river, as well as any flow from irrigation being curtailed on the Shasta and Scotton impacts to those systems as well?
So for the fishing regs, we presented some, and I know there's a final version that's out there that I don't probably have in front of me right now, and they may have changed, so I can get that to the board in terms of what the final recommendation or what the recommendation is at this point.
I was just hoping to just disclose that to the public.
Okay, yeah, I can get that to you. I just don't have that.
Maybe we can post that when we get it. Thank you.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
No.
Supervisor Coker?
Do you have an anticipated number of fatalities fish with all of the sediment that's rolling down the river?
So to date, we have heard of no fish kills. We're watching that. I don't have a specific number that we're expecting. The turbidity to date has had some areas where it's been elevated, obviously, and I think with the COPCO actions today, we may see more pulses in sediment. I do want to point out that as you go much farther down the system, a lot of the sediment you may be seeing also may be coming from a lot of the burn scars, like the McKinney fire. So we're looking at that. We're hoping the USGS gauge comes on soon as well. But we're also looking at the other turbidity gauges that are on the system. So, but there's a lot of people out there watching, and as soon as there'll be a fish kill, we will be made aware of it, and we will notify Chelsea to notify.
Those are numbers we'd like to have.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Supervisor Chris?
I have no follow-ups for you.
Go ahead, Supervisor Kopp.
You didn't answer the Scott and Shasta. I want to come back to that.
Okay, now could you repeat the question, sir?
Sure. Throughout this long process, we were repeatedly told that water from the Shasta and Scott would not be part of the mitigation for whatever happens on the plant. Yet I'm seeing a petition for low flows on both the Shasta and Scott being considered right now. And I know your department is heavily involved in those regulations. I want to know, I guess, how much influence the Klamath is having on those petitions and whatever the minimums are going to be coming out of that regulatory process.
I can't speak for the people that wrote the petitions. I've read the petitions, and it's my understanding that they're specific to providing the amount of water necessary to protect fish and wildlife resources in both the Shasta and Scott Rivers. Whether the petitioners have other things there, I can't speak to.
Was the department considering its contribution to the Klamath as well?
My program is currently not contributing, contemplated the contribution of the Shasta and Scott waters to the Klamath. We're focused on those petitions and providing the recommendations and information we have as our public trustee responsibility for fish and wildlife resources. So.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll keep revisiting that, I'm sure.
No, absolutely.
So that brings up where I know we're looking at the MOU, I'll call it, but Ms. Murphy and your department are still working on that. Is that?
Yes, we're working on a response right now.
How close are we?
We got the letter. There was a delay in us getting the letter, so we got the letter recently, and we're working on the response to get back to you in terms of the department's position.
So for members of the public that don't know what we're asking is that...
due to the dam removal project, the county's been concerned that should there be a kill of the reds currently or the spawn run altogether because of this activity, we did not want the Scott and Shasta River systems held liable for future 3 years henceforth for what could occur through the dam removal process. Not saying that's going to happen, but we're looking to talk about that now before we get into 3 years hence, and then the Scott and the Shasta are held liable for that. So that's what we're working on. I think that is it, sir.
Well, I appreciate it, and I will get back to you on the blasting.
Thank you.
And I'll give it to you. Perfect. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and thank you for holding this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Ms. Murphy, just a quick question. I know we touched on this in your presentation, but the deconstruction operating hours 24/7, you touched on that a little bit, but I guess my concern was, we wouldn't be allowing activity that would be kind of a noise issue, you know, after a certain hour of the night. We wouldn't be, I guess, allowing something to happen where people are going to be up all night just because of deconstruction. Is that correct?
Yes. It depends what you mean by allowing. So because it is within the FERC zone, right, there is little I think we can do other than stress the issue of public disturbance. And so we will make sure to talk to the contractors. They would, I think, be amenable to looking at taking loud noises and concentrating them to daytime activities, mm-hmm. and particularly blasting, right, mm-hmm. etc. I can definitely talk to the contractors and see what we can do to get noise reduction.
That would be my hope. I mean, yeah. Through many of the projects that come through Siskiyou County, through our planning department and through this board, a noise abatement seems to always come up, whether in the CEQA document.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised it hasn't come up here. So we're making that available. And then lastly, with regard to FERC, if this board is required to formalize some form of a letter to FERC with our concerns of some of the issues that are coming up, the unintended consequences, we need to be made aware of that so that we can get an immediate response to that as well.
We're going to look into options for communicating with FERC. The formalized option is to write a letter and submit it through the docket and have it be publicly available information. But we're going to do some more investigation on appropriate ways to get the concerns of the board and the county heard through FERC.
Okay. And I will emphasize that we can't afford a delay on that, especially with the activity that's going on currently.
I will put it at the top of my list.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we're adjourned.